This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 209 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I got a question via email this week from Josh. It reads, JJ, I'm a Broncos fan, and I'm just finding out that Vic Fangio has been hired as the new head coach. Hiring a defensive coordinator seems completely counterintuitive to me, given what is successful in today's NFL. Just looking at the coaches that made the playoffs this year, Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick are the only guys who were defensive coordinators prior to being hired as head coaches, and John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator and defensive backs coach, but the other nine guys were all offensive coordinators. Obviously, Carroll, Belichick, and Harbaugh have been successful, but I feel like this is more or less because of adapting. From a fan's perspective, it seems that to be very successful in the ever-changing landscape of the NFL, that an offensive mind is a greater tool than a defensive one. What would someone who sifts through NFL data on a daily basis say? Thanks, Josh. I wanted to kick off the show with this question because of all the coaching changes that have gone on throughout the league this week. And really, it's not just the coaching changes. It's the reaction to those changes. We've seen people get angry that not enough defensive coaches have been hired, and we've seen people get angry at literally any coaching hire because that's what we do. And it's a safe thing to do, since we know that a high percentage of NFL coaches won't be around for a very long time. We're probably going to be right if we say a coach was a bad hire. When I read this question from Josh, though, I really just thought that we're all probably overthinking the offense and defense thing. I mean, in my opinion, I don't necessarily think that someone absolutely needs to have been a successful coordinator in order to be a head coach. Just like I don't think a really good editor has to be someone who's awesome at creating that content. Or a principal at a school has to be a really good social studies teacher. You need to have an understanding of the whole system. You need to be a good delegator. And you need to understand your weaknesses so you can surround yourself with people who can fill those holes. But the more I thought about this question, the more I think that there could be something mentality-driven at play. So I went and I looked at all 32 head coaches to start the 2018 NFL season, and I marked whether the head coach was an offensive one or a defensive one, if they had an offensive past or a defensive past. Unsurprisingly, to start the year, there were more offensive-minded coaches than defensive ones. The ratio was 18 to 14. But as Josh noted in the email, only three head coaches in the playoffs this year were defensive-minded coaches. And you could even argue that it's actually only like 2.5 because John Harbaugh has more of a special teams background. That means 9 of the 18, or half of the offensive-minded coaches this year made the playoffs. And then on the other side, 3 of 14, or 21% of the defensive-minded coaches ended up making the playoffs. Now, the sample size is small here, and I didn't continue down this path of marking whether a coach was offensive or defensive through the years. If someone wants to do that, feel free. But I did think the gap was pretty interesting among this year's crop of coaches. So naturally, I wondered why. And the obvious reason for this could be that offenses are winning in the NFL these days. Anyone who tells you otherwise is probably a dinosaur. It's an offensive-driven league. Stop with this defense crap. According to NumberFire's expected points model, there were only three defenses this year that actually had expected point totals in the negatives. Now let me explain what that means. Our expected points model dates back to the year 2000. During that season, 19 different teams had negative expected point totals on defense. Now I'm referencing negative here because it's the action of taking away points from an opposing team. If a pass results in an interception, that's a negative expected points play, and it benefits the defense. So we're seeing defenses not be nearly as effective, and offenses are. But what's also interesting is that the year-over-year stickiness of good defensive play really isn't that strong. So not only is it hard to have a good defensive team in one season, but it's even more difficult to sustain that level of play. So going back to the original question, I think it naturally makes sense that you want someone in a head coaching position whose mentality is offensive driven. It's not because he's going to necessarily be an offensive mastermind like Sean McVay, but subjectively, there's probably something to the mentality of that type of coach. Maybe they're more aggressive. Maybe they understand the relationship between passing and rushing and how rushing isn't the way that you gain a lead in today's NFL. I mean, would it really surprise you if we find out that there's a strong correlation between head coaches who are defensive-minded and head coaches who think that running the football is an effective way to score points in today's game? This isn't to say that a defensive-minded coach won't or can't succeed. It's just that what that head coach has traditionally done matters a lot less than it used to. And that may be difficult to comprehend. And if that's the case, it makes being a head coach and delegating properly more difficult. Now, to be clear, I think a whole lot still needs to be done on this topic. It's one that's not easy to measure. I definitely haven't done all the research that I want to do on it. But for now, that's my answer. That yes, I actually do think it's smart for teams to look for a coach who's got an offensive mind. He doesn't necessarily need crazy success as a coordinator, but that mentality seems to be important. So thanks for the question, Josh, but we've got a lot more questions to get through, so let's get to them. This question is from @WhatTheChain. How do you explain Nick Foles? Good question. I have no idea, but I know I'm going to have to explain it to my daughter someday, because she won't believe me when I tell her stories about BDN. I will say that it's very possible that Nick Foles was never really that bad. We saw his unsustainable yet really good season with Philly back in 2013, and then he goes and he starts for Jeff Fisher, who we know can kill talent. I also think it's sometimes hard for football fans to embrace variance. You know, if I go to Twitter and I start talking about running back value, there's always someone bringing up Nick Foles or Peyton Manning when he won the Super Bowl with the Broncos, and those people are saying, you clearly don't need a good quarterback to win a Super Bowl. And those people aren't wrong, but that's not really the point. The point is sustainability across a long period of time, not the result of a single elimination playoff. Winning a Super Bowl, let alone being competitive for multiple years without a good year-over-year quarterback in place, that's tough to do. But variance exists, and we know anything can happen on any given Sunday. And that can even be extended throughout an entire season. Players can have somewhat outlier seasons based on luck, but also based on the system that they're in and the players that they have around them. And I think the latter is what's important for Nick Foles. There's been some luck, but every team needs luck in order to make a playoff run. I think the system is right for Foles, and it's something that just clicked. It's really not that much different than what we saw with Case Keenum last year in Minnesota. It just worked for him. So that's how I would explain Nick Foles, I guess. He's in a system that works for him, he's not really that bad of a quarterback, and the two combined make him a serviceable starter who can help a team make a playoff run. This next one's an email from Nate. It says, what are the expected points in your success rate percentage model? Does it depend on game script and offensive/defensive play calling? E.g., I'm assuming a 4th and inches quarterback sneak would be deemed a success with a single yard gain, while a 1st and 10 screen pass for the same yardage would be deemed a failure. But what is the measure there? Yeah, so first off, I didn't create Number Fire's expected points model. I think everyone needs to know that. It was done by our chief analyst, Keith Goldner. But it's all based on what's happened from particular down and distances in field position situations historically. It's not really about yards. Obviously, yards will correlate to expected points because you're increasing your team's chances of winning by gaining yards. But a 1 yard gain on 1st and 10 is much different than a 1 yard gain on 4th and 1. One may be a failure while the other one's a success. I actually did an evergreen show on this with Keith all the way back on episode 14. You can go ahead and check that out if you want to learn more about net expected points. This next question is from @TripsTakeEm. What to make of the running back situation in Kansas City? Does Damian Williams have a chance to be a lead back next year? I mean, if I were running the Chiefs, I'd make him the lead back because I wouldn't want to be investing in the position. I think he's in a good spot, though, at least, to have some sort of role after signing this extension. But I would still expect Kansas City to spend a 2nd or 3rd day draft pick on a running back. I think that's bound to happen. So valuing Williams right now is really just about how others in your league view him. I think not discounting Damian Williams at all and assuming he's the 2019 starter, that would be foolish. But I do think him leading the backfield in touches next year has a decent probability given his competition won't be that experienced. This next question is from @RotoDad. Who will score more PPR points over the next 2 years, Melvin for Lynn or DJ for Kingsbury? I think you have to go with Melvin Gordon here, and I don't really think it's that close. Gordon is younger than David Johnson, he's in a better offense, he's got a better line, and he has more established pieces around him. So it's Melvin Gordon, even though Johnson should see a nice uptick in volume as a receiver with Kingsbury coaching Arizona. Or you would assume so. This next question is from @22JBright. One or two specific stats that you view higher slash better when evaluating running backs or wide receivers and trying to find the next great at those positions. So when you're trying to find the next great player at running back or wide receiver, you generally have to look beyond what they've done in the NFL. You're looking for a breakout to happen, and breakouts don't happen after a player's already put up monster numbers. I did do podcasts last season on finding breakout running backs and wide receivers that should help with this question. But I can tell you the things that I look for in a college prospect, most of which is market share and volume related. People often dismiss volume because it just means that a player got the football or he was targeted. But there's a reason that player got the football or was targeted. It's because that player is good. And there's a pretty nice correlation at those positions in their transition to the NFL within volume statistics. Players who are good in the NFL were also good in college. It's not that groundbreaking. But if you want to find how to spot breakout players at those positions, I did do a couple of podcasts last offseason on it. They're episodes 135 and 137. This last question is from @SmithBK. Which was the most surprising game of the wild card round and why? Did any of the outcomes change how you view the divisional favorites now? I think the most surprising outcome had to be Philly over Chicago. The Bears were the biggest favorites of the weekend and they were upset. So I think that has to be the biggest surprise. But I said this on my Prepping for the Playoffs podcast. Of all the teams playing in the wild card round, I thought the winner of the Ravens-Chargers had the best chance to make a run. It's tough to actually go on a run given what we've seen over the last 5 years with ones and two seeds consistently winning. But I feel more confident in LA than I did last week given their performance against Baltimore. LA looked great, and I think that they have a legit shot against New England this weekend as well. That's going to do it for today's show. Thanks to all you guys for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Spotify. And I'm also on Twitter, at LateRoundQB. You can hit me up on there if you have a future mailbag question, or you can also email me at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the games this weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.